This is a sermon about surfing. Although I have to confess that I have never surfed in my life, unless, of course, you count surfing the internet, which we've all done, I'm sure, a lot of. I have, though, from a safe distance, observed windsurfers on the north coast of my native Ireland or on the beach in Aberdeen, and I would be sure on this lovely, crisp winter's day that there will be windsurfers at the beach in Aberdeen today. It does seem to take a lot of skill and practice. There's the obvious problem of keeping one's balance. But along with that is the challenge of timing, knowing the precise split second to thrust your body forward, dig your arms down through the water, and catch the wave. If you leave a little early, the wave comes down on top of you and it pushes the nose of your board down into the water. Then the board becomes a lethal weapon because it then shoots up spiraling into the air like a Poseidon missile. That's if you leave too early. But if you leave too late, there goes the wave and the party is over. You have missed your opportunity and must wait for another wave. But if you leave at precisely the split second when you should, I imagine that the feeling is one of absolute exhilaration as you feel the swell of the wave beneath you. Shakespeare puts these words on the lips of Brutus in his play Julius Caesar. There is a tide in the affairs of men which, taken at the flood, leads on to fortune. Omitted, all the voyage of their lives is bound in shallows and miseries. On such a full sea, we are now afloat, and we must take the current as it serves. There is a tide. There is a tide, there's a time when the surfer catches his or her breath and waits for the swell of another wave. There is a tide in the life of an individual. There is a tide in the life of a congregation. I believe the question for us is, will we catch the wave? Will you and I ride that tide together? The example that we have before us from Scripture, unfortunately, is a negative example. It's the tragedy of how Israel missed the wave. They lost their moment. The story was read for us from the book of Numbers. When Moses sent them to explore Canaan, he said, "Go up through the Negev and into the hill country and see what the land is like and whether the people live there are strong or weak, few or many. What kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? What kind of towns do they live in? Are they walled or unwalled or fortified? How's the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are there trees on it or not? Do your best to bring back some of the fruit of the land." It was the season for the first ripe grapes. So we're told that they went up and they explored the land. When they reached the valley of Eshcol, they cut off a branch bearing a single cluster of grapes. Two of them carried it on a pole between them along with some pomegranates and figs. And after completing their spying trip, they come back and they make their report. They said, "The land we explored devours those living in it. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes and we looked the same to them." Think of it. It was only 2 years since the children of Israel had left Egypt. After only 2 years in the wilderness, they are now on the outskirts of Canaan. The land of their dreams is waiting for them on a silver platter. And all they have to do now is to unite their will with God's will and move forward. Caleb, voicing the will of God, said, "Let's go, come on, we can possess it." But what do the people do? Well, they run a feasibility study. They form a committee. Listen to what is said. "Let us send men before us that they may explore the land and bring us word again of the way by which we may go up. and the cities into which we shall come. In effect, what they did was to make up some fake news, and they brought the wrong report and the wrong perspective back to the people. And from there, their dream unravels, their momentum is derailed, and they will now wander aimlessly for another 38 years in the desert. There is a tide. They missed their wave. The moments of life are thrust upon us. There is the split second when the sportsman must decide whether to have a go at goal himself or to pass the ball. There is that moment when the stockbroker, looking at the computer screen, must decide whether he will buy or whether he will sell. There comes that moment when the young lady must at last make up her mind once and for all and say whether to say, yes, I will, or no, I won't marry you to the young man. There is that moment in our life when God unmistakably calls us to commit our lives to him. Remember our reading from the Acts of the Apostles. Paul was speaking to King Agrippa. The king heard the gospel and said, well, Paul, you almost persuaded me to become a Christian. But Paul went one way and Agrippa went the other way, and they never met again. You see, life is not like our modern television sets where we can rewind back to a particular moment. Before we had that facility, we used to have things called video recorders. Do any of you remember making the mistake that I sometimes made? You're watching a program on TV that is being broadcast, and for a split second, you thought you were watching a video recording, and you try to rewind something back again. Life is not like a video recorder. We cannot rewind it at will. There is a tide. Very often you and I will pave our lives with, I meant to do that. Bruce Steelman tells the story of how one day Satan called himself the emissaries of hell, and he asked them, who will go for us to aid men and women in the ruination of their souls? A hideous creature stepped out of the darkness and said, I will go. And Satan said, if I send you to the children of men, what will you tell them? He said, I will go. If I go, I will tell them there is no heaven. Satan said, they will not believe you, for in every human soul there is a piece of heaven and a knowledge that in the end good will triumph and be rewarded. You may not go. Another creature stepped out of the darkness, and Satan said, if you go to the children of men, what will you tell them? The creature said, if I go, I will tell them there is no hell. Satan said, they will not believe you, because in every human soul there is a thing called conscience, the knowledge that just as good will be rewarded, evil will be punished. You may not go. Finally, the most hideous creature of all came out of the darkest place of hell and said, I will go. And Satan said, if I send you to aid in the ruination of the souls of human beings, what will you say to the children of men? The creature said, I will tell them there is no hurry. Satan said, go. And that spirit is around in the world today. Let me ask you, is there a change in your life that needs to be made? And today is the day, and tomorrow is too late. We cannot make changes in our lives just any old time we decide to make a change. We can only make changes when we are convicted by the Spirit of God of a certain pattern of life, and we see the damage that we are doing to the lives of other people and to ourselves. And we can ride the tide of our remorse to an AA meeting or a marriage counselor or a Bible study or a whole new way of looking at life. We go through life and we say, well, I'll write the letter tomorrow. I'll spend time with my aged parents or with my children or with my grandchildren tomorrow. There is a tide. Of course, as your preacher today, I'm hoping that you will ride a tide to a new way of looking at your commitment to God and to his church in this place in the year that is ahead. Oh, I know all the reasons for excusing yourselves from deeper commitments. I'm already overstretched. My circumstances don't permit it at present. What about so-and-so over there? Why should I do anything more when they can't be bothered? There is a tide, and we need to step alongside everyone else and to move forward to the promised land as bright as the promises of God are. When the reconnaissance committee came back from the promised land, the majority report the 10 spies made was this. They said, we've got good news and we've got bad news. First, the good news, take a look at these grapes. And the two men hoisted the one cluster of grapes off the pole and heavily dropped it on the ground. Obviously, it's a land worth fighting for. Then they say, now the bad news. You think these grapes are big? You should see the people. They are big. They're the sons of giants, and scholars have done extensive studies on the sons of the Nephilim and have uncovered the fact that these people were big, big people. They said, next to them, we are no bigger than grasshoppers. And the children of Israel began to weep. These were wives who said, we don't want our husbands to fight giants. We don't want our children to grow up without their fathers. But Caleb stands up and says, let's go. We can do this. I want to point out that Caleb does not quarrel with a single fact in the majority report. He doesn't say that the cities are not fortified. He doesn't say that the people are not big. He doesn't try to spin it. Caleb simply adds a fact of his own, which is the reality of God. With the reality of God in his picture, now he is not in a position of comparing himself to a giant. He's in the position of comparing the giant to God. And next to God, the giant is nothing but a teensy little microscopic flea. Jesus said, be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. Maybe you're going to come up against some giants this week as you go into your world, into your job, into your business, into your family, into your marriage, into your health issues that you're facing. God has a way of letting us hit bottom sometimes. Sometimes we not only hit bottom, we crash through the floor. And when we peer up through the hole and we're no bigger than a grasshopper, we can say, God, if it's going to get done, you're going to have to do it. And that's the greatest position of strength in the world. It didn't bother Caleb and Joshua to be in the minority. Did you know that the Emancipation Proclamation that set free the slaves in the United States of America was very unpopular at the time that Abraham Lincoln issued it? In the North, it was very unpopular. In fact, in Lincoln's own cabinet were not in favor of the Emancipation Proclamation. Someone asked him about it once, and he said, well, we took a vote of the cabinet, and the vote was 8-1, but I was the one. As the Christian, you're the one. You plus God equals a majority. Back during the Second World War, in North Africa, in Eritrea, the Italians were being driven out of a port. Of course, the Italians were fighting on the side of Nazi Germany at the time. They wanted to make the harbour unusable for the Allies, who would be coming in after they evacuated that harbour. They took huge barges, filled them with concrete, and took them out to the mouth of the harbour, where they sunk them in the bay. The Allies' big problem was how to get the barges out of there. They did so in a most ingenious way. They got huge gas tanks, the kind that they have at oil refineries, huge gas tanks that carry hundreds and thousands of gallons of petrol, and they sealed them so that they were watertight, and they floated them out to the place where the sunken barges were. At low tide, they placed massive chains around the barges and the gas tanks. And when the tide rose, the tanks rose and they pulled the barges out of the sucking sand at the bottom of the bay. And from there, it was very easy to float them away and open the harbour. Think of a moment of the power of that scene. Those barges were chained to the tanks. The tanks would rise on the tide. The tide was moving according to the gravitational pull of the moon on the Earth's surface. The moon was moving within the solar system. The solar system was in the Milky Way, the Milky Way galaxy. The galaxy was moving within the great rhythm of the cosmos, and it was the hand of God that was moving the cosmos at that moment. When you and I obey the will of God, we're moving with the power of the hand that moves this cosmos. When we take to the tide to fight, the Church of Jesus Christ is fighting the dawn. We were born for such a time as this. So let's go to the beach. Let's catch a wave. Surf is up.